We bring in our leadoff guy. He's the columnist for the Register Guard. Catch his work on the front page of the sports section. You can also try registerguard.com. You could also become a follower on Twitter. Use the handle at Austin Meek RG. Austin Meek, good afternoon to you, sir. How's it going?
Hey, Steve. I'm doing good. How are you?
All is well. I want to start with football. He was the first grad transfer quarterback. Vernon Adams now hoping to make it as a Sunday player, working out in SoCal, drafted 9 days. So you did kind of a catch-up piece, and he's dealing with proving he's not a system quarterback to maintaining some of his improv. So I guess, who's he working with, and what are some of the major things he's working on?
Well, I think you had it exactly right there. I think the challenge for Vernon Adams as he prepares for the draft is to take the parts of his game that made him such a compelling college player and then refine that and add in the skills that you need to be an NFL quarterback, because it is a different game. You know, he made the point that at Oregon he never took a snap under center. I mean, that's what everybody talks about, you know. And it sounds simple to, you know, just take the ball from the center and drop back and throw it, but there's some pretty detailed mechanics that go into that. So a big part of his draft preparation has been exactly that, working on the mechanics of a 5- and 7-step drop and just refining some little rough edges in his game so he can still be the player he was at Oregon, which obviously Oregon fans know is very entertaining to watch, but then also refine it a little bit to present himself as an NFL quarterback too.
Now, one thing I never thought about is the idea of how you select an agent, which you also covered. His parents got involved. There were financial concerns. What did you learn, and what did Vernon Adams have to say about some of the issues during that process that went into deciding his representation and, I guess, who he ended up going with?
Well, this is interesting to me, too, because I didn't know anything about it at all. And I'm actually working on a bigger story that's going to look more specifically at that part of it. But just as it pertains to Vernon, you know, he got to Oregon and said he had really no idea how the agent process worked. Like, how do you get an agent and how do you pick an agent and what's a good agent, what's a bad agent? And he said he had some agents contact him when he was at Eastern Washington. But then when he got to Oregon, it really picked up because, you know, he's going up a level and agents were starting to notice him. And so Oregon has a guy, Jeff Hawkins, who's been around the program for a long time.
Sure.
Director of operations and now associate AD. And so that's sort of Jeff's deal. He works with the players on picking the agents. And Jeff said that he maybe has never had a player interview more agents than Vernon, just because it was all new to him, you know, and he just needed some time to sort through all these different options. So I think Vernon interviewed like 8 different agents on campus before the bowl game, and then he met with 3 finalists, and the guy he ended up choosing flew in the day after the bowl game, which is kind of crazy for me to think about. Like, it was such a crazy game, and, you know, Vernon got hurt and couldn't finish, and the next morning it's like, on to the rest of your life, you know, meeting with an agent and figuring out what to do for the NFL. But I guess that's how it goes.
Yeah, so some of what you reported, obviously, I know I was close, but really not really an NFL talent, never having to go down that road, is when guys sign with an agency, if they're not well-to-do, I always thought that maybe they got, you know, some money loaned to them, but you could actually strike a deal with an agent, whether it's your training, your travel, and what you go through prior to the draft, where they'll actually pick up the tab?
Well, first of all, consider me shocked that Scott Boras and Lee Steinberg weren't lining up for your services. Sure, you were a big-time prospect in the day.
They weren't really returning my calls back then.
but yeah, I didn't know this either, but, you know, depending on the caliber of prospect you are, the agents will pay for some or all of your draft preparation. And in fact, that's like the biggest thing the agent really does leading up to the draft. Because, you know, there's not really a whole lot the agent can do to get you drafted or convince teams to draft you in a certain spot. That, the teams make those decisions for themselves.
Sure.
So really what the agent does is he sets you up with training and, a position coach. And for a player like DeForest Buckner, for instance, the agent's going to pay for all of that stuff and make a big investment in the player. But for somebody who maybe is a marginal draft pick or a potential free agent, the agents aren't going to want to invest a ton of money in those guys. And so that's why the players have to be really careful to not end up in a situation where the agent is going to expect to be repaid for the training or the lodging. And, then the player doesn't get drafted and he's not making any money. And now he has to pay back his agent for this training that he did thinking he was going to get drafted. So for some of those guys, it's something they really have to be careful about.
No, very interesting. All new to me as we can continue with Austin Meek of the Register Guard. So I've been reading about VA, where he might go in the draft. I personally don't really think he's an NFL quarterback. I don't buy the comparisons to Russell Wilson. He's not as fast. He was not recruited by a bunch of D1 programs. That's me. Your gut, what do you think of his shot of getting drafted and playing at the next level?
Well, let's be honest. Chip is going to draft him, right? I mean, that's what has to happen. I don't know. I think he gets a shot. I don't know if he gets drafted. He might be, he might be a free agent guy. He might be a seventh round pick. He might get drafted in the fifth or the sixth round. I don't know. As his agent sort of acknowledged in that story, there's a pretty wide range of opinions about Vernon. I'm sure there are some teams that absolutely would not draft him. But there also may be a handful of teams who look at him and say, even though nothing about him really says successful NFL quarterback except for his numbers, there's just something about him. He's got this kind of spark, and he had it at Eastern Washington, and he had it at Oregon, and that's certainly no guarantee that it's going to translate to the NFL. Most of the guys who try to play in the NFL don't make it. I mean, the numbers are definitely against him. But there may be a team that just sees something in him and says, hey, he's worth a seventh-round pick. Let's bring him into camp and see what he can do.
That's legit. I want to head north. You were at the Oregon State spring game. Of course, we learned Seth Collins would not transfer. He's coming back. He's going to be a receiver, not a quarterback. But they have a quarterback competition. It's one of the guys in the mix, the transfer from Utah State. I guess kind of eye on Darryl Garrettson. What kind of game did he have? And safe to say he's the leader in the clubhouse?
I think that's fair to say. He definitely looked like their best option on Saturday at the spring game. I'm not sure that he's going to be like an all Pac-12 caliber quarterback by any means. And I'm not sure that he's going to, break any passing records or anything like that. I think John Mannion's records are probably safe. But watching him play, I think he will be an upgrade over what Oregon State had last year at that position. He made some nice throws in the spring game. He dropped in a couple deep balls that were well-placed and right on target. The passing game was just so hit and miss for Oregon State last year. One of many problems they had, but if they can get more consistent play at quarterback, at least that gives them something they can build around. They just never got settled at that position last year. It was this revolving door the whole season. If Garrettson can at least establish a little consistency there, then it gives them a starting point. It gives them something they can build around.
Yeah, another spotlight position is running back. I mean, you had Storm Bars. Woods is gone. Ryan Nall had a great game in the Civil War, but he had like 300 of his 400-some-odd yards in two games. I didn't even see his name on the stat sheet. Who's in the mix? Because, nobody else from last year had more than like 175, 180 yards running the ball. I just don't know who pops.
Yeah, well, Gary Anderson said after the scrimmage that Ryan Nall is definitely their number one running back, and he said it pretty definitively, but Ryan Nall apparently got hurt, I guess, just in the last week, because he played in their scrimmage in Hillsborough a couple weeks ago, so it must have been fairly recent, but it sounds like it was maybe somewhat substantial, because Gary Anderson said that Nall would be out for the rest of the spring and maybe be limited in the fall.
Whoa.
So, that's something to keep an eye on, I guess, as he comes back from that. But so behind Ryan Nall, I think it's kind of wide open. They've got a guy named Tim Cook, who I get him confused with the Apple CEO, but different Tim Cook, I guess, is
nice.
Running back who a JUCO running back who was hurt last year and didn't play, but and also didn't play in the spring game, so I don't think anybody's really seen him, but he potentially could also be a factor, I think, for them at running back.
We continue with Austin Meek of the Register Guard. I wanted to get your thoughts as we move to MLB. Bryce Harper, the reigning MVP, caused a little stir, said the game's become stale, kind of went after, took on older guys like Goose Gossage. And as somebody who's 55, I'm getting kind of annoyed by what I consider the curmudgeon patrol. And I know Harper's a little arrogant, but he's 23 and he's terrific. You buy into these unwritten rules, or is it about, it's 2016, it's not 1976, different guys, different culture?
Well, you can always trust Bryce Harper to keep it 100, as the kids would say. Is that the expression?
Nice.
I've never used that phrase in my life. That's the first time I've ever said that. But
nice.
He's got like the decal on his bat, right?
Right.
You know, I like Bryce Harper. I like watching him as a fan of baseball. I think he's the best player in the game, the way he's playing right now. And I like to watch guys who are emotional and guys who wear their feelings on their sleeve. I'm not of the opinion that baseball players need to just be totally stoic and emotionless on the field. You know, bat flips, I think the whole thing about bat flips is kind of stupid. I seeing a guy throw his bat in the air doesn't do anything for me, but I'm also not, like, you know, morally offended when somebody does it. But mostly, I just, any reason that I can tell Goose Gossage to shove it, I will take advantage of, because former Yankee and all those Royals Yankees games back in the 70s when he was public enemy number one, I'm happy to tell him to shut his mouth now.
Well, hey, I'm a Yankee fan, and I'm happy. So there's a uniting factor there. But, you know, we see this with Scottie Pippen, some of the other guys banging on the Warriors and Steph Curry and how they would have stopped him in their day. Somebody brought up a point that the older guys can't turn off their competitive switch. You know, it's been 20, 25 years since they've been relevant. So you think it's just a classic case of human nature? People get a little insecure, maybe a fear of getting old and just not being in the limelight anymore?
I understand the inclination to make these generational comparisons. Like, could the Bulls beat the Warriors? Could the Warriors beat the Bulls? All that. I understand why people go there. But for me, I kind of just would prefer to appreciate greatness in its own time. You know,
yeah.
I can watch Steph Curry and the Warriors and not, you know, be racking my brain and wondering, yeah, could they beat the Bulls, the Jordan Bulls of the 90s? I don't know. Could they beat the Lakers in their prime with Shaq and Kobe? I don't know. The Warriors right now are a great team. Lakers are not a great team. The Warriors right now are a great team. And I just would prefer to appreciate them in their era as the best team of right now and not have to worry about how they compare necessarily to another generation.
Yeah, I thought sports were supposed to be fun and we're supposed to kind of marvel at how great these guys are, not be concerned that they would have failed in 1978. But that's just me. Maybe I'm trying to stay young and connected. But Austin,
aren't we all?
Yeah. Sometimes it's a little tougher for a particular generation. But Austin, as always, great stuff. You enjoy your week, and we'll catch up with you on Tuesday.
Okay. Talk to you then.
All right, take it easy.